Said that Assange and his team has offered to answer that he should offer he had offered to answer questions by Swedish police in the UK. That's beyond dispute, and that offer has not been taken up. And as you mentioned, Swedish courts have been very critical of the prosecutor, of the Swedish prosecutor for this. And if you read those judgments closely, they're in Swedish, of course, you'll see that it is as strong a criticism as you can expect possible from a Swedish court against the way the prosecutors have proceeded here.
And Masandras, we only have about 30 seconds or so, but your sense of how public opinion both in Britain and in Sweden is in respect to how their governments are dealing with the Julian Assange case?
Well, it's split. It's split. But no country likes to get a ruling for arbitrary detention to be censured by the UN like this. But if you don't abide by it, you fall into the category of countries we don't like to compare ourselves with, who do not abide by these rulings. And it's very important for the international human rights systems that countries like the UK and Sweden do actually go for show a good example and do follow these rulings, because in the end they are bound by the conventions. And there's no more authority body to interpret and apply the convention on arbitrary detention than this working group, which is established by the UN.
Masandinas, we're going to have to leave it there, but I thank you so much for being with us. He is the former UN Special Rapporteur on Arbitrary Detention and chair of the UN Working Group on Arbitrary Detention now. Professor at University of Oslo, a visiting professor at All Souls College in Oxford, where we just spoke to him. A very special happy fifth birthday to Arthur Alcock. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Thanks for joining us on Democracy Now!
KBOO Portland. The time is 5:01. Coming up next is the KBOO Evening News.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the film screening of This Changes Everything, Tuesday, February 9th, 6:30 p.m. at the Multnomah Arts Center Auditorium in Portland. This Changes Everything is a film directed by Avi Lewis and inspired by Naomi Klein's international bestseller of the same title that attempts to reimagine the vast challenge of climate change.
I've spent 6 years wandering through the wreckage caused by the carbon in the air and the economic system that put it there.
There will also be information and representatives from local groups involved in the climate change struggle. Again, that's Tuesday, February 9th, 6:30 p.m. at the Multnomah Arts Center Auditorium, 7688 Southwest Capitol Highway in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
And I saw records made. Music literally written in wax.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the 33rd Real Music Film Festival, running through February 8th. Friday, February 5th, will show American Epic. The film pieces together the extraordinary 1920s story of record companies leaving the big city to tour America's backroads and capture for the first time the raw musical expressions of rural cultures. These field recordings, initially aimed for the rural markets from which they came, democratized music and gave voice to the most marginalized demographics in the nation. That's February 5th at 7 p.m. at the Northwest Film Center in the Witzel Auditorium at 1219 Southwest Park Avenue in Portland. More information on the films and more at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Coming up next is the KBOO Evening News, and this KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from the League of Women Voters of Portland, presenting Cleaning Up the Willamette, the Portland Harbor Superfund site. This civic education program takes place Thursday, February 9th at 7 p.m. at the Multnomah County Building Board Room, 501 Southeast Hawthorne Boulevard. More at lwvpdx.org.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KABU Evening News, a look at the health department effort to reduce dirty syringes in the Willamette River.
The State Department of Environmental Quality released a report on the Bullseye Glass Factory in southeast Portland emitting high levels of cadmium and arsenic into the air.
And Portland State University has received a federal grant to study prevention of campus sexual assault.
Good evening. This is the KABU Evening News for Friday, February 5th, 2016. I'm Liam Delta.
And I'm Linda Olson Osterlund. The State Department of Environmental Quality Wednesday reported the Bullseye Glass Factory in southeast Portland is emitting high levels of cadmium and arsenic in the air near Southeast 22nd Avenue and Powell Boulevard. Community members are invited to an open house next Tuesday at Cleveland High School to meet with staff from the Department of Environmental Quality, the Oregon Health Authority, and the state and local elected officials. The meeting itself is being convened by the Multnomah County Health Department and Portland Public Schools. KABU News spoke today with Marty Pivetto, founder of the group Neighbors for Clean Air, 6 years ago. As a mother of young kids, she found out that the air quality near her home in Northwest Portland was rated as among the most toxic in the United States. She said today she is encouraged that Multnomah County officials have stepped up to inform local residents when state agencies failed to do so.
We have long suspected, and actually our state has long known that, you know, air pollution, we have dangerous levels of air pollution all across our city. And there, while the state regulators may be precluded, we're really encouraged by the idea that potentially the county would use its authority as the local health board to do something about this public health crisis.
You've been following these issues about air quality in Portland for many years now. Can you talk a little bit about the history? As you said, there's pockets of bad air all over the city. What is the history here of your work and what you've seen?
I started this work because I was right where I really feel for these people who live in this neighborhood in southeast Portland because, you know, 6-7 years ago, that was me learning about a large source of, you know, pollution in my neighborhood, and that, you know, on first blush, the regulators saying there's nothing they can do about that. And my history with this was to realize that, you know, our state regulators actually know a lot about the bad air quality in the Portland metro area, and they have not utilized their authority to take action to protect people from this. And so it becomes, you know, it really is do-it-yourself regulations to you know, that it takes community outrage and mobilization to make anything happen.
Part of the issue, as I understand it, is how the, I believe it's the DEQ, didn't notify the neighbors about their concerns. Can you talk about that a little bit?
It's really endemic of the culture that has festered at that agency to be so backwards that the community is the last entity to know. And, you know, again, regulators have known for really almost a decade that we have high elevated levels of cadmium and arsenic and other dangerous toxics in our air. Even the federal government knew this because they came and tested at Tubman School in North Portland in 2011 and discovered the same, you know, concerning levels of cadmium in that area. And yet nobody in the public is alerted, and that the agency really doesn't have the tools and the resources. We would expect in Portland, Oregon, that they would have the most innovation and tools and resources at their disposal to track these things down and to, you know, untease the complicated urban airshed, and they don't. And it's really frustrating to see them lag so far behind and really, you know, putting people's lives and children's development at risk.
So just to remind listeners, if they are not aware of this issue, this location near Cleveland High School, I believe, can you talk about what's around Bullseye Glass that like might really concern people? What kinds of facilities are around it?
Well, there are many schools within just a mile away from the site. including, you know, the elementary schools. Right across the street, adjacent, directly across the street, is a daycare that serves infant to small children, over 100 children at that daycare. So that is very alarming, because we always know when you're dealing with metals and heavy particulates, you always know that the highest deposition is closest to the source. And so so it's always very concerning. But we also know they travel, and we know that these are bioaccumulative, that, you know, they get into, there's really no safe levels because they accumulate in the blood. They don't, you know, they don't disappear like vapors. So there are a lot of concerns about the schools, Abernethy School, Hosford, Cleveland High School. I mean, and all these schools just represent the communities around them that live, you know, it's very closely adjacent to a lot of residential areas.
Mary, for people who want to get active on this issue, how can they participate with you, or what suggestions would you have?
We'd love for them to like us on Facebook so they can keep up with the latest information. They can get on our newsletter list, whatsinourair.org. They can sign up for our newsletter. It's really critical that I think folks turn out for this meeting next week with the local health officials and get real answers about what they can do if they are concerned. But we're going to be continually working on the bigger fixes. We really feel like this is... this crisis, yet another crisis, is just endemic to the systemic failure, and we need to turn our regulators agency around so that it is truly protecting our health from the air pollution, not protecting the polluters who create it.
That was KBOO's Lisa Loving speaking with air quality activist Mary Pivetto.
Oregon Representative Greg Walden plans to address those gathered for the Freedom Rally being held from noon to 3 p.m. tomorrow at the Oregon Convention Center. The Oregon Liberty Alliance hosts the event. Other speakers include conservative blogger Michelle Malkin and Reagan administration alum Dinesh D'Souza. According to social media venues, as many as 75 people said they plan to attend the rally to support fiscal responsibility, pro-life, public safety, and family values and religious liberty. Facebook posts indicate some who plan to attend the event will be going to Salem to support the family of the slain occupier from the Malheur Wildlife Refuge. Walden chairs the Subcommittee for Energy and Commerce. He's raised more than $16 million in campaign contributions since he took office in 1998. He's been an outspoken critic of the Federal Communication Commission's position on an open internet. He describes the commission's broadband deployment policy as troubling in a letter to the FCC today.
When the Willamette River fans found a beach littered with dirty syringes last summer, they put out a call to clean it up. Officials there say local syringe exchange programs are doing a good job, but some users choose not to participate for a range of reasons. This month, the health department in the city of Portland launched a 12-month pilot project called Healthy Streets to reduce the number of discarded syringes along the river and in downtown Portland. The program also includes targeted outreach to drug users and a public awareness campaign. Multnomah County Health Officer Paul Lewis spoke with KBOO's Lisa Loving about the new program.
Well, I think it is a simple, common sense solution. When we were down at the waterfront talking to some TV reporters last summer, young woman sitting nearby was listening to us and said, why don't they just get a box for them right next to the trash can? And that's exactly what we have in place now. It's not a perfect solution. The real problem is that too many people are suffering from drug dependence and addiction, and leading to the consequence of used needles in public places, which are not only litter, but they're worrisome to people because they are sharp objects with blood on them. And even though the risk of disease transmission is rare, it is a concern. Our biggest concern, however, is for those who need treatment so they can get into long-term recovery.
Does the health department plan further resources for that aspect?
Yeah, so the boxes are being used as a communications tool They've got phone numbers on them for whether there's a problem with vandalism of the box or if it's overfull, and also to provide outreach for individuals that are ready to get into recovery. And by publicizing these boxes, our outreach workers are, again, trying to establish the relationships that will help people get ready to access long-term recovery.
The disposal bins are on the west side of the waterfront under the Burnside Bridge and on the East Bank Esplanade near Salmon Street.
The U.S. Army Corps of Engineers has been ordered to pay the Yakima Nation for costs related to cleaning up a contaminated island in Washington's Columbia River. The Yakima Nation sued the Corps in 2014. They argued that tribal members weren't compensated for helping plan the cleanup of Bradford Island, according to the Yakima Herald. The island is an historical tribal fishing spot, but it also became a dumping ground for waste from Bonneville Dam for decades. Lead, mercury, PCBs, and petroleum chemicals leaked into the Columbia River, resulting in warnings against eating fish caught in the area. U.S. District Court of Oregon Judge Anna Brown ruled earlier this week that the tribe's cleanup costs should be covered by under Superfund laws, but she denied the tribe's motion to be reimbursed for prohibiting fishing in the island area. Brown wrote in an order issued Monday that that issue will have to be sorted out in trial. The tribe's attorney, David Askman, said he believes the decision sets an important precedent for tribes trying to protect their resources.
Portland State University has received a $750,000 grant to design materials to help colleges and universities prevent sexual assault. The federal grant was one of two awarded throughout the United States by the U.S. Department of Justice as part of the White House Task Force to protect students from sexual assault. PSU psychology professor Keith Kaufman drafted the grant proposal and says it's an opportunity to get ahead of problems on campus rather than react to them.
This is a wonderful opportunity for us. We were awarded one of two grants nationally to develop a situational-based prevention approach to prevent campus sexual assault. We're going to be working with eight campuses around the country to develop this prevention program. What we're going to be doing on each campus is we're going to be working with students, faculty, and staff around a four-step process to identify risks on campus, to come up with effective and practical solutions, and to go ahead and implement those solutions on campus.
The grant will fund a multi-year effort to develop comprehensive sexual assault prevention manual for other institutions to use. A Washington Post Kaiser Foundation survey from 2007 showed that one in five undergraduate women have experienced attempted or completed sexual assault after entering college. Other surveys suggest that number could be as high as one in four. Professor Kaufman plans to bring in student voices throughout the project development process.
It's also a really nice opportunity because we're going to be able to highlight student voices in the process. And our goal is really to focus on preventing the kinds of risks that may lead to campus sexual assault as well as other types of problems on campus.
PSU hired a full-time sexual violence prevention coordinator last fall. Researchers hope to present practical and sustainable solutions to address those risks and how to implement specific changes.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for Counterspin, followed by Bread and Roses at 6. At 7, Hard Knock Radio, news, views, and hip-hop. Portland's weather tonight, rain with a low of 41, a 40% chance of showers tomorrow with a high of 52, and areas of fog tomorrow night with a low of 39. Today in history, in 1989, the last Russian troops withdrew from the Afghanistan capital, Kabul. Ultimately, 13,000 Russian soldiers were left dead and over 22,000 wounded in the 10-year Soviet conflict in Afghanistan. The quote of the day is from Zbigniew Brzezinski, National Security Advisor to Jimmy Carter. He said about the Soviet-Afghanistan war, "The day that the Soviets officially crossed the border, I wrote to President Carter, we now have the opportunity of giving to the Soviet Union its Vietnam War."
It's 5:20, time for daily commentary from Jim Hightower.
The dictionary defines a patriot as one who loves his or her country and supports its authority and interests. Supports authority? Hooey! An American patriot is one who supports the egalitarian ideals of our country and is willing to challenge authority every time it devolves into authoritarianism. We see staggering levels of corporate authoritarianism asserting control over us in the Walmartification of our economy, Cokeification of our government, Murdochification of our media, Exxonification of our environment, Monsantoification of our food supply, and so on. Just keeping up with all the assaults on our people's democratic idealism can sometimes lead to an emotional overload that social commentator Marty Kaplan has dubbed informed citizen disorder. Symptoms include an outbreak of hives when you see Fox News and a nagging compulsion to flee to the woods, which is exactly what plutocratic powers want all dissidents to do. There is, however, a revitalizing antidote to the tragedy of ICD. Periodic exposure to America's mavericks and mutts, free thinkers and greedwhackers who refuse to conform to the corporate order. They receive little media or political attention, but these are our nation's everyday patriots, wholly imbued with a stalwart spirit of fairness and justice. They're the underdogs battling big money and power, yet they commonly win. This is Jim Hightower saying, this populist spirit is flowing today all across our country, from dozens of battles against big oil frackers to numerous actions against the unconscionable labor practices of Walmart. Forget the overstuffed, business-as-usual politicians who keep running games on us for the preservation of the status quo. Our true history is not about the great men, but about the grassroots people. Just as in the original revolution, the democratic future and populist potential of America is in the heads and hands of rebels.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's populist take on what the powers that be are up to. Find out more at hightowerlowdown.org.
A major part of the Klamath Basin water use agreements has been revived, even though Congress failed to approve it by a December 2015 deadline. State and federal agencies say they'll now try another approach that bypasses Congress altogether. David Kesters of KBOO News, in conjunction with the Oregon News Service, has more.
A plan for the Klamath Basin water use agreements may have expired in Congress, but at least part of it was resurrected this week. The states of Oregon and California, the utility PacifiCorps, and two federal agencies, Commerce and Interior, say they're moving forward to amend the Klamath Hydroelectric Settlement Agreement to remove four dams in the basin by 2020. For tribes and sportsmen in the region, it's one more chance to restore native fish runs. Congress couldn't agree on it before last year's session ended, so Klamath Tribes Chairman Don Gentry says a new approach was needed.
It's an attempt to keep this in the hands of the states, the PacifiCorps, and the parties. The opposition was to federal authorization for dam removal. And so this is basically keeping it out of the hands of the federal government, so it won't require legislation.
Gentry says it's been almost 100 years since the first dam was built in the region, which cut off migration of salmon and steelhead to the tribe's treaty rights fishing areas. So far, the states and agencies have agreed only to embark on this new path. The details are still to be worked out. Taking out the dams is only one phase of a larger, more complex water rights picture. The Klamath Basin Restoration Agreement is the part that expired at the end of December without congressional approval. That leaves all the parties to that agreement facing all the same concerns about how to share a scarce resource. But Brian Johnson with Trout Unlimited says they realize they're still in it together.
For the master water sharing, you know, nobody really knows how we'll do it, but irrigators, ranchers, tribes, conservation groups, we all still see a need to work those issues out and believe that cooperatively is better than fighting about it.
He says all parties will have a chance to weigh in on the dam removal proposal as it unfolds. He adds that no federal money is needed for removing the dams. PacifiCorps and the state of California will cover it. For KBOO News, I'm David Kesters.
The White House this week hosted a summit aimed at bolstering preparedness for a major earthquake on America's West Coast. The summit was prompted by a New Yorker article published last year, which outlined in detail the likely effects of the quake, particularly on the Oregon coast. A Twitter chat session using the hashtag CascadiaEQ was held by local planners to coincide with the White House seminar. FEMA has predicted the next Cascadia quake and its resulting tsunami will kill nearly 13,000 people. It's also expected to injure 27,000, leaving 1 million homeless and 2.5 million people in need of emergency food and water. The U.S. Geological Survey is developing a shake alert system, which will offer 20 to 30 seconds of early warning for people to take cover prior to the main shock of an earthquake. That system is still in the beginning phase. The federal budget passed in December included $8.4 million for further development of the system. In the wake of Tuesday's summit, the Obama administration announced a new executive order for enhanced seismic safety. Through geological evidence as well as written accounts of the tsunami that struck Japan, geologists have pinpointed the exact date of the last major earthquake in the Pacific Northwest, January 26, 1700. A series of small earthquakes occurred 300 miles west of Oregon in the midst of the Pacific Ocean just this past June.
WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange has been arbitrarily detained and should be compensated for 5 years he spent in asylum against arrest for sexual misconduct. That's according to a ruling today by the UN Working Group on Arbitrary Detention, part of the Human Rights Commission. Swedish and British authorities rejected the ruling. Assange has been in the crosshairs of the British and Swedish government since December 2010. That's when he was first sought for questioning on one charge of molestation and one charge of rape, made by two women in separate situations who spent time with him during a weekend conference. Both women alleged that the sexual encounters started out as consensual but became non-consensual. The allegations were made 4 months after WikiLeaks released the film Collateral Murder. It was an aerial video taken by U.S. soldiers as they fired on Afghan civilians from a helicopter gunship. Two of the attack's victims were small children. So far, no charges have been filed against Assange in Sweden. He's sought by Britain for jumping bail.
Photos detailing Bush-era abuse of military detainees were released today following a protracted effort by the Pentagon to block the disclosure. The ACLU has been pursuing release of photos collected as part of a United States Naval Criminal Investigation Service probe into physical abuse of prisoners since 2003. A federal judge decided against the Pentagon's arguments, seeking to avoid public access to the photos, which detail bruises and other early, fairly minor injuries to detainees. The photos lack any information regarding context and do not identify the person photographed. Alex Abdo, an ACLU attorney who has worked on the photo litigation since 2005, said, quote, "It's most likely the case that these are the most innocuous of the photos, and if that's true, it's a shadow of meaningful transparency," end quote. The ACLU continues to demand release of another 1,800 images that are part of the same cache. Those photos are expected to contain images of far more serious injuries. You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Jimmy Tardy, Robin Ryan, Martin Dodge, Lisa Loving, and David Kesters. The producer is David Kester. Our engineer is Ian Gambary, and the KBOO Evening News and Public Affairs Director is Lisa Loving. A podcast of local stories from this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews, or look for us on Twitter at KBOO News. You're listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River 91.9 FM. I'm Linda Olson-Osterland.
And I'm Liam Delta. Coming up Monday morning on KBOO at 7, Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez. At 8 on More Talk Radio, Celeste Carey and Cecil Prescott speak with local activists from the Asian Pacific American Network of Oregon and the COFA Alliance National Network about the new Facing Rage report and priorities for the Oregon legislature. At 9, the Old Mole Variety Hour, a program of social and political commentary from a socialist feminist point of view. At 10, Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15 on Locus Focus, Barbara Bernstein interviews philosopher and nature essayist Kathleen Dean Moore about her new book, Great Tide Rising, Finding Clarity and Moral Courage to Confront Climate Change. At 11, Ellen Goldsmith hosts Health Watch, and at 11:30 on Health and Healthcare Forum, Roberta Hall covers a recent gathering of health and housing experts on the social determinants of health. Now stay tuned for Counterspin, followed by Bread and Roses at 6, and have a great weekend. Good night, Linda.
Good night, Liam.